Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast about children's development from the Center for Inclusive Childcare.
Welcome to Inclusion Matters, a podcast from the Center for Inclusive Childcare. I'm Priscilla Weigel, the Executive Director, and I'm here today with a longtime friend and partner of CICC, Cammie Howard, and she is going to join us today to talk about the really supporting children through parental incarceration. And Cammie has a background as a licensed clinical social worker. She has infant and early childhood mental health background. She has 20 plus years of working in the community. And Cammie, there's a lot more to you. So I'm just going to hand it off to you and say welcome and tell our audience more about you.
Awesome. I'm so excited to be here. I was equally excited to write the curriculum and now being able to have this opportunity to kind of just touch and highlight on who I am and the overview so people can get an idea of what the self-study is about. So like you said, my professional background in education is in licensed clinical social worker. So I have a master's in social work. I've also been certified as an infant early childhood mental health certification, African-American studies and child development. My focus is really anything to do with human behavior. And outside of the educational aspect, I live, eat, and breathe the community because I'm part of an urban community that had been impacted by little resources, much adversities. And it is important for me to give back to those communities, mold and shape the future, our young children, to aspire to overcome some of the adversities like I've overcome. So without giving so much detail, I've been working, like you said, 20 years plus years in organizations and communities that are faced by diverse populations and abundance of adversities, but also an abundance of strengths.
Yeah.
And I don't think we focus enough on the strengths of the culture, the communities, the families, and the children that we work with. So that's an important aspect that I like to highlight. And then my other part of the work that I do is working with organizations with leadership development, in particular trauma-informed leadership. What does it look like to apply a trauma lens in the culture of the organization and in your leadership skills? And then equity. Equity is so important. And in this era, I feel like it's even more important to emphasize that, making sure that we are building a sense of belonging and mattering throughout cultures and agencies and throughout communities. So that's just a snippet of who I am and what I bring.
You bring a lot. And that's why it's exciting to talk about this self-study at that we are offering on our website currently. It's live. It's available. Greater Twin Cities United Way 80 by 3 initiative has allowed everyone to take it for free right now, which is a wonderful thing. And so today, Cammie, I'm just really excited for our listeners to get to know a little bit about you and your process and the way you built this self-study as the author. So what has inspired you to really focus on the impact of parental incarceration when it comes to young children?
Well, like I said in my intro, I am from South Minneapolis, so an urban community with lots of strengths. So I don't look at this as work. It's deeply personal for me. I've had several family members and close friends impacted by mass incarceration, with the disproportionality of especially men of color, African-American, Indigenous, Latinx. So it's not just something I've read about. It's not just something I researched. I've actually witnessed it in my community happening in everyday moments. So one moment that really stuck with me is that I had a few children that were in my care and we were driving in their car and their father was recently incarcerated and they were witness to that. They saw it happen. That kind of trauma doesn't just fade. That fear stayed with them. It showed up in their play, in their interactions, in their ability to trust. They were more hypervigilant. They didn't know how to process or talk about it. These children were under age of 6. And then the parent, the custodial parent, the mom, she didn't want them visiting at first because she thought it would scare them even more. She didn't have the words to communicate. She didn't know if I should say something. Should we ignore it? Act like it didn't happen. She didn't have the supports to support the children with the recent impact of their father being incarcerated. So I remember one day they were in my car and we're driving past this huge building on the side of the highway. And I didn't even think they seen it. But with excitement, one of the children said, "That's where my daddy's castle is." And it was excitement. But that moment just, it stays with me because that mm-hmm. child was trying to make sense of something so painful, but yet tuck it into something that they can apply and connect with. They knew that daddy wasn't in the house. They knew that daddy was away. And reframing it as a castle, I guess, it maybe was like a protective factor. I don't know if the mother reframed it, but it was innocent and yet heartbreaking. And that's when I knew that this work, these children and families, it's necessary to touch these topics. And we're just now tipping the iceberg, you know, for some of these yeah. topics. And then professionally, like in my intro, I spent years supporting families, educators, people working in the communities, navigating all kinds of trauma. And I can say without hesitation that parental incarceration is one of the most overlooked yet deeply damaging experiences a child can face. So in my company, we're Divine. Like I said, I witnessed firsthand how systemic inequities rooted in race, poverty, isolated communities, over policing, lack of resources, they impact the children. And a lot of the impact is invisible. It's not acknowledged. And so I feel like my job as a change agent, a liaison for the community, a community member, is to pull out these injustices, to connect, to make it no longer invisible wounds, to support the children. They're awful, unheard, unsupported. And a product of the systems that often fail these communities.
Yeah. Oh, your sharing of that story is so powerful. And I think what you provided as the units and the different topics that you've covered in the self-study really have provided the tools for educators and families who are experiencing it both to really have those words, those ways to explain, those really important supports in place. You've laid out a really nice framework for educators who are working with children, which is primarily who listens to our podcast, Inclusion Matters. So yeah. We have a lot of folks out there who might be caring for young children who may or may not know that they have a parent who isn't incarcerated, because sometimes, and this, you know, you go through this in the self-study, sometimes it's something that's not talked about. Mm-hmm. It can be very, very private and, and so when you don't know what a family is going through, it can be really hard to understand behaviors that are coming out in the classroom or different ways that a custodial parent is interacting with you as an educator. There's a lot of factors. And given what we know, you know, there's a lot of statistics out there. There's trends. How can we better understand parental incarceration as more of a systemic issue that's really impacting communities?
So when we think about parental incarceration, it is really easy to frame it as a personal choice, a bad decision, a one-time mistake, but it's bigger than that. And in order for us as communities, individuals, advocacy educators, supporters to move forward, we have to shift in our lens from personal blame to a broader view of systemic harm. And we have to hold space for the harm. And I always, one quote I always say is, who's responsible for impacting that? We all are, especially for our vulnerable children. Every single adult is responsible for impacting the impact of parental incarceration. And we have to acknowledge that the systemic harm is rooted in policies, institutions, cultural narratives that disproportionate marginalized communities, right? There's a quote, and I forgive me because I don't remember who the quote is from, but I remember reading it years ago, and it goes, "Every system is perfectly designed to get the result it gets." Mm-hmm. And when I think about that, systems are intentional, and we got to hold space for that truth telling. I'm not minimizing crime. I'm not negating accountability. I'm just having a step back, grasp of understanding, and reframe it as a bigger picture. And some of the statistics that were in the self-study, I just want to go over it because they were really profound. So some of the statistics from the U.S. said nearly half of the people in state prisons are parents. 1.25 million kids struggle to cope because their parents are incarcerated. we know the disproportionality in many systems, but African American, Black, Native, Indigenous, and Latinx children are the most that are impacted. 20% of Native and Indigenous, 13% of African American, 6% of Latinx children have all experienced incarceration. And sometimes we focus on the urban areas because of the stereotypes, but thinking rural areas actually face the highest rates of parental incarceration. There's more isolation. There's less resources. So some of the statistics that I read about that is 12% compared to 8% in urban areas. They face the impact of incarceration. So, you know, in understanding it from a systemic standpoint, we have to acknowledge these challenges. And they're not just isolated challenges, isolated events. They're not one-off. They're results of larger systems that are constantly disadvantaging certain communities. And for some individuals that's not impacted by that, it is hard for them to understand that.
True.
A lot of blame goes towards the individual versus the systems that people are really surviving in. So it is an interconnection of systems. And when I mean about interconnection of systems, I'm pointing out how institutions like criminal justice, child welfare, housing, redlining, all these different systems that we're in cause harm. The harm is not always intentional, but the harm is there.
Yeah. And that shows up then in the caregiving environments where young children are spending a lot of their time. Yeah. And that's why this self-study really came to be, was to support those educators, those caregivers in those situations. And so I know that there's a lot of strategies in the self-study. There's a lot of helpful tips, but how might the impact of these systems show up in early childhood environments?
Yeah. We have to step back and think about how it shows up in parents, because children don't exist outside of relationships. So one thing that I learned through the research is that it indicates that the majority of incarcerated parents are fathers, especially African-American, Black, and Indigenous Black fathers. Going back to some more statistics that I found, that 1.1 million fathers are in state and federal prison, and they're still parenting from state and federal prison. So it's not that they don't care. They don't want to be there. But the systems are disrupting the family system. More than 2.7 million children have experienced incarceration of a parent. And most of these children, their custodial parent that they live with is our mothers. That's just the world that we live in. And many, even though the desire to parent from prison systems, many children go without contact or limited contact to their incarcerated parent. There's logistics. Most of the prisons, especially federal prisons, are far. If you don't have access to vehicles or transportation, you don't get to get there. There might be abundance of reasons why the mother, the custodial parent or caregiver may want to keep the child away. In my story, it might be fear. I don't know how to talk about it. Some parents that are incarcerated feel like it's best for the child to stay away, right? I don't want them exposed to this harsh environment. So there's many reasons why there's a disconnect. But separation just doesn't hurt children. It breaks bond. It disfractions families. It leaves those emotional scars that can last for generations. And that's why this is so important for me to unpack and share some of the deeper understanding. So, you know, when I was reading all the statistics and everything I said, starting with thinking about the parent, what this really revealed to me is that our systems are set up for certain people to be valued, certain people not. They focus and support certain populations they ignore, but they're not set up for fathers to be successful. Even after incarceration, many programs exclude parents, fathers in general, There are not too many programs where if a father needs to stay in a temporary transitional housing, that they can even bring their children or the children can be there. So, you know, being able to have that deep commitment to children, we're failing these fathers that have the desire to be present, but don't have the support systems.
And there's a lot of emotional and developmental impacts on the children because of all those things that really shape how then children, as they grow and learn, are going to be and influence how they will respond to future things or obstacles in their lives or challenges related to, I mean, all of these things are going to impact that child's development.
Yeah.
And that's hard because this child, and this happens so often with young children, they don't have any say in it. They're just in the middle of all of it. And that's why we as advocates for them, you know, speaking out to say, when you notice these things, what kind of questions are you asking yourself as a caregiver? What kind of information do you need to better meet the child's needs instead of jumping to assumptions or beliefs that you might have had rooted in some things that might not be true? So those emotional impacts really are hard for children and families. And when you think of educators and caregivers, you know, they have, there has to be some skill in recognizing trauma and the, and those trauma responses.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that always sticks with me is like, how can we step back, withhold judgment and assumptions, and replace that with curiosity and lean into observations? A lot of the time, us as educators and caregivers, we're noticing the story in a narrative by just observing children's behaviors. So a parent might not have that trusting relationship with us to disclose some of this stuff. There's a lot of stigma, you know, in communities, a lot of stereotypes. But those behaviors hold meaning. And because we don't get the whole story, I remember one of my mentors, Dr. Ann Garrity, she would say it's not necessarily important to identify what the trauma is, but we really need to focus on how those children experience the traumatic events, how they interpret it, the traumatic event, and how it impacts them. Because we may not get that whole story. But this is why we take trainings like this to increase our understanding, to increase our ability to observe, read social cues, to sit back and wonder and stay curious, right? And honestly, we have to acknowledge that children, they become collateral damage. And then there's a ripple effect to the whole family unit. And in that, relationships are damaged, emotional well-being, sense of safety and stability is fractured. And these are all the things that children need to thrive, right?
Right.
So the impact is urgent, it's profound, but sometimes it's invisible.
That's true. Sometimes it is invisible and it is hard to notice it if you're not looking for it with a keen lens. And that's why I think, as you noted, taking the self-study and really fine-tuning your skills as that educator, as that caregiver. And when you think about some of those strategies and those practices, Cammie, what are some trauma-informed strategies that educators can use to create that safety, that supportive learning environment when a child is affected by parental incarceration?
Yeah. So this is nothing new. We've been supporting children and families for years. It's just a new adversity, right? So we know what to do. We just honestly need to do it. And so Megan Gunnar at the University of Minnesota, it just always sticks with me. She says children need three things: security, stability, predictability, and social support. And so it's the things that we do in everyday moments that matter the most. How can we provide a predictable, stable environment? How can we give children small choices every day so they have some of that controllability back? It's so important, even at a young age, for them to own their own narrative. Because their worlds may be or feel chaotic and they don't have a lot of choice, how can we bring some of those choices back just in everyday moments? And then social supports, because we thrive in the context of relationships. So, you know, kind of going back to the impact that helps us understand what to do, we have to get an understanding and acknowledge that it's more than just a physical loss, right? It's more like a parent missing in the home. It is a traumatic experience. It has a large impact. It's immediate. It's extreme. And re-emphasizing, it's often invisible. So that ripple effect goes a lot of times unaddressed, and it leaves these deep emotional wounds. And fear, anxiety, trusting relationships and challenges shows up. And so as providers, it is our role and job and duty to read behaviors and cues and wonder, right? A lot of that wondering, again, I've had just the best mentors in my life. But one of my mentors taught me just this simple saying. And she would say, sometimes parents would come and they just don't know what to do with children's behaviors. And sometimes they take it personal. So she said, one parent came to her and said, you know, my child's acting out. They're showing aggressive behaviors. I just think they're doing it on purpose. You can hear the frustration in that parent's voice. You can hear the cries for help, even though it's not specific. And Dr. Ann Garrity said her response would be to sit back and say, I wonder what that purpose is. I wonder what those purpose is. That's not huge. It's not a radical intervention. It's just those small moments when we replace judgment with curiosity, when we sit in empathy and not behaviors, when we have a better understanding of the meaning behind these behaviors, so we can really meet the unmet needs of the children and what they're experiencing and what they're expressing. Healing starts with connection, not correction. Another thing that as early educators and providers, years ago, I was trained in the circle of security, family
intervention. Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
I love that intervention. It's still around, right? Like I said, we know what to do. It hasn't changed. But there's this theme, and it's just the power of being with, being present. Yeah. And sometimes we don't need to do anything but be present. So confirmation that I'm here, I'm not going anywhere, that you can have control in this environment, in this moment, that you have support, that there's nurturance every day in our relationships, right? Mm-hmm. Just the power of being with and being present. It's those small acts that build trust, that help rewrite these stories, and it helps children move from fear to resilience to thriving.
Oh, that's beautiful. Well, we could go on, and it's so fun to talk with you, Cammie, about this because you're so passionate about it. And I'm really, as we wrap up our conversation, what do you see as a meaningful takeaway or a shift that you hope listeners will carry forward after listening to the podcast, after taking the self-study?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, we already know what helps. We have to invest boldly. Like the Nike commercial, just do it. This is an emergency. It's a crisis. The children cannot afford for us to sit back and talk about the situations. So again, moving from deficit to investment to foster relationships, trust. Going back to what I said, reframing from blame to moving to dignity, moving from judgment to curiosity. There's a quote, I love quotes. There's another quote that I can think of, and it says, children impacted by incarceration are not broken. They're brave, but courage shouldn't be their only tool. So we cannot leave them brave alone. We need to have support. They need to know that we are in this together, that there is somebody that is bigger, stronger, wiser. That's, again, from the circle of security, that we are here to center their emotional safety and not just centering around children, but also centering around the parent, both parents, especially the conservative parents, because a lot of times these parents were once these children, and some of their mental capacity and developmental level mimic that because they're also operating out of stress. Focusing on reentry and reintegration for the parent. So last, I'll leave you with healing, centering healing and connection, but it requires consistency. So, you know, these aren't big radical ideas. They're evidence-based proven approaches. They're community approaches. So we've gotten feedback from the communities. So we need to show up and just do. It shouldn't be optional. It needs to be a shared commitment.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, Cami Howard, thank you for joining us on Inclusion Matters and for talking today about really supporting young children who are experiencing parental incarceration. And we look forward to all of our listeners checking out the self-study on our website. It's on our 80 by 3 tab. We're grateful to Greater Twin Cities United Way for their funding to provide this wonderful resource for early educators. Thank you, Cami. Hope to have you back again to talk about other great topics.
Absolutely have me back. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really enjoyed that conversation.
And if you need more resources related to young children and their development, go to inclusivechildcare.org. And thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening. For more resources, visit us at inclusivechildcare.org.